Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! We've got a little bit of a foreshortened program this evening. My sincere apologies. But this is, I guess it's going to be one of those weeks. Yesterday, late getting into the chair, I was scatterbrained. I was positively blonde for 3 solid hours. And then today, it can't be helped. We have Agnes and I will be heading down the hill and into town for the monthly meeting. It happens on the third Tuesday of every month of our local group dedicated to bringing an end to mountaintop removal, not just in this community, but in West Virginia and in Appalachia as well. It is a part of that ongoing process by which I say we cannot talk the talk without walking the walk. And this is our walk of the walk. So I'd like to tell you we'll be gone for an hour and I'll be back behind the microphone for hour number 3. I can't guarantee that, however. But if it is possible, I will be back. We'll bug out of here after the first hour. And then we will try to get back in time for hour number 3, but I'm not entirely certain. So I just apologize and beg your indulgence. This is the face. Not my face. Agnes's is much prettier. But this is how it works when you not only espouse activism but participate in it as well. And I know you know, because you are so many of you activists in your own right and in your own way, and you too walk the walk as well or better than you or I or any of us talk the talk. So that's what's going to happen. But that's okay, because I think we've got enough to keep us busy for the coming hour. I got an email from our dear friend Dr. Bill O'Brien earlier today, and he directed my attention to an op-ed piece in the Boston Globe by Neil Gabler entitled "Hope Caught Up in a Sea of Obstruction." And while I refrain generally from just reading to you at length, this one is worth it. And it's worth it because it reflects things that have already been said on the horn. And if you are a regular day-to-day listener, night by night, evening by evening, whenever it is you listen, if you're a regular listener, you will recall that there have been questions posed as to whether or not, not because of the personalities involved, but by the very basic political structure, questions as to whether or not this country can fix its problems. And this op-ed piece by Neil Gabler that Dr. Bill sent along to me lays it out there perfectly. And so a little, first of all, a little golf clap to the Horn family for being ahead of the curve again. You guys never cease to amaze me. And for anticipating and being so tapped in to the national spirit or thought processes that you can say it here before it ever comes out there. So Neil Gabler writes, here's the situation. President Obama, this is in today's Boston Globe. Here's the situation. President Obama maneuvered a stimulus package through Congress that after being reduced to attract additional senators, has proven insufficient to stimulate the economy. Now, given the political calculus, it would be nearly impossible for him to introduce an additional boost. He also proposed a regulatory scheme for Wall Street that was so riddled with compromises and concessions that it was unlikely to prevent another economic meltdown. And he has pushed a national health care plan that is almost certain to be eviscerated, and that, even in its disemboweled form, may not pass Congress. Because it is the only television news cable channel that we get, I dashed past Fox a few minutes ago, and lo and behold, there was some prattling bubblehead talking about how Barack Obama, President Barack Obama, frequently referred to on this program, complimentarily, by the way, for those who haven't seen Idiocracy, as President Not Sure. I saw some prattle about the fact that he had the Blue Dog Democrats up to the White House to talk to him about health care, and that the Blue Dog Democrats had gone away, having just told him, no, get stuffed. We have corporate clients. We do not have voting constituencies. We have corporate clients, and the corporate clients have told us to tell you where to get off. And this is it, Buster. Oh, not in so many terms, but in the actuality of what their actions will be, most assuredly. So Neil Gabler was proved prescient. Neil Gabler continues, obviously we face daunting problems, but we nevertheless continue to operate with a kind of hopefulness that we will meet the challenges and triumph. Historically, we have reason to feel this way. In the last 70 years, this country faced down the Great Depression, Nazism, and Jim Crow. The system, however balky and tardy it may have been, has always worked. But today, beneath the optimistic rhetoric, lurks another possibility that no politician and few pundits want to admit, that the system is no longer up to the task, and that the factors that once brought relief are no longer operable. There is the real possibility that this time we will not win, but rather founder, the way Japan has done since its economic catastrophe. There is the possibility that this time it is hopeless. How has it come to pass that the most powerful and most self-confident nation in the world now seems helpless? The short answer is that political action is a function of political will, the public's more than the politicians, and that ours has been steadily sapped. Wow! Were we not talking about this right here on this program last night? Why, yes, as a matter of fact, we were. Rahm Emanuel, the president's chief of staff, has said that crisis creates opportunity, but he is only partly right. Crisis creates pain. It is the pain that creates the opportunity. The New Deal, that great spasm of political initiative, rose out of a national agony. 25% of Americans were unemployed and with absolutely no safety net to catch them. There is plenty of agony now, but it is not as deep nor as wide, in part because of the programs of the New Deal, including unemployment insurance. This is just parenthetically mine. 16 states' unemployment programs have now gone broke. President Roosevelt had the advantage of an angry citizenry who wanted him to do anything to rescue them. Obama has the disadvantage of a passive citizenry that frankly may never hurt enough to demand what might finally cure what ails them. Again, have those words, if not precisely and literally, have those ideas not been spoken on this program, on this network, over the course of days and weeks and months? And yes, years? Yes, they have. Mr. Gabler continues, Obama is also the victim of a much different and much more complex political system than the one FDR faced. A system with far more interests to broker among. The number of lobbyists in Washington, a good indicator of how many interests must be served and how vested those interests are in maintaining the status quo, was that not the precise phrase used on last night's program, the maintaining the status quo, and who wants to maintain it? Yes. Yes, it was. Anyway, the number of lobbyists in Washington, a good indicator of how many interests must be served and how vested those interests are in maintaining the status quo, has more than doubled since 2000. There are now roughly 40,000, 2,000 more since last November alone. In the last year, oh, and here's a hint, it's not a bunch of tree-hugging environmentalist lobbyists either, nor is it a bunch of brand-new minted lobbyists from organized labor. Neither is it a bunch of newly minted lobbyists from the gender equity and marriage equity community. No, 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 brothers and sisters. These newly minted lobbyists, are working against everything that is good and decent in this country. There are now roughly 40,000, 2,000 more since last November alone. In the last year, nearly 2,500 began lobbying on the single issue of climate change. Again, they ain't on our side. By a political Newton's law, every action has an equal and opposite reaction, which means that there are thousands of thrusts and parries on any major piece of legislation, a sure prescription for inaction or for tepid action. Neil Gabler is drilling this into the wall, isn't he? Well, there's more. Then there is the new media ecology. Yes, Roosevelt had... Oh, pay attention to this one, pay attention. Not that I have to tell you, but, you know, lights, sirens, bells, whistles, flashing, lightning, thunder. Pay attention to this. Then there is the new media ecology. Yes, Roosevelt had his enemies in the press, almost all of which was arrayed against him. But he did not have a 24/7 cable antagonist dedicated to his presidential demise, or hundreds of internet bomb throwers, as Obama does, and he did not have a press whose baseline was skepticism about any possible government initiative. It is not the right-wing media that inhibit change. It is the mainstream media with their own attachment to the status quo, their own loaded questions about dramatic new policies, and their predilection to identify potential missteps rather than to extol potential boldness. On health care, for example, the press has yet to ask one simple and critical question. Why can France have vastly superior care at half the cost per person of ours? Why is their mortality and morbidity, why are their mortality and morbidity rates lower than ours? Remember, that's France. Cheese-eating, wine-drinking surrender monkeys, that France. Remember? But finally, Mr. Gabler writes, and most importantly, our own political institutions have been steadily and deliberately hogtied or even dismantled so that they cannot effectively do very much. In truth, the system was never very good at meeting crises. It was designed for incrementalism, not daring leaps. Our founding fathers, worrying about demagogues and runaway democratic effusions, created a number of institutions and rules, from the aristocratic Senate, which was devised to put the brakes on what they feared might be the careening of the more democratic House, to the entire system of checks and balances. The object was to prevent change, not facilitate it. What those fathers could not have anticipated was a political party dedicated to total obstructionism. I don't know that I completely agree with Mr. Gabler's thesis in the beginning of that paragraph. It seems to me that the founders and the framers did, in fact, anticipate political parties. They certainly had a British model on which to draw. They urged, George Washington urged desperately that we avoid factionalism and party, just as he urged that we avoid foreign entanglements. They urged it. They thought perhaps they had it licked, but even before Washington was out of office, parties had already formed. Federalists and Republicans. The Republicans being what would later become Democrats, the faction of Jefferson. Alexander Hamilton and John Adams leading the Federalists. Power-hungry, ham-fisted, passing revolting pieces of legislation, such as the Alien and Sedition Act. At any rate, Mr. Gabler says, what those fathers could not have anticipated was a political party dedicated to total obstructionism. So I take it that what he means is that they anticipated parties. They did not anticipate that one party would at all costs, even unto the undoing of the nation itself, advance its strive always to advance its political agenda, even at the expense of the well-being of the Republic. What those fathers could not have anticipated was a political party dedicated to total obstructionism, dedicated to making certain that the government would fiddle while the nation burned. For this, we have the Republicans to blame for their actions and the Democrats to blame for their inaction. Are you listening, Harry Reid? No, you're not. No, Harry, you live in a little bubble where nothing ever pierces the armor of your magic underwear. As comedian Bill Maher recently put it, the Democrats have moved to the right, and the right has moved into a mental hospital. History time now from Neil Gabler. Americans forget that after 4 years of Herbert Hoover's dithering during the Great Depression, members of his party almost unanimously opposed FDR's economic stimulus. And that in the procedural run-up to Social Security, they held ranks against it, too. 12 of the 19 Republican senators voted to have Social Security scrapped. Old age security, they argued. Wow, sit down for this. Old age security, they argued, would spoil Americans. Yeah, just like a 25 cent increase in the minimum wage is going to collapse all the small businesses in America. And no one ever calls them on the carpet with all this doomsaying and all this Chicken Little-ism and busts them for the filthy little liars that these conservatives, these neocons, these Republicans, these patriotic right-wing mercants are. Flash forward 30 years, and the party was back to its shenanigans, opposing Medicare. Exactly half the Republicans in the House voted against Medicare, while Senate Republicans voted 17-13 to stop it. Only overwhelming Democratic majorities in 1935 and 1965 led to Social Security and Medicare. And this at a time when the GOP had a moderate wing. The conclusion? In times of dire need, the system only works when there is a huge one-party majority and a popular, muscular president of the same party to keep the legislators in line. But remember, he has argued, Mr. Gabler has, For this, we have the Republicans to blame for their actions and the Democrats to blame for their inaction. It is true what he describes about Republican attempts to destroy Social Security in its cradle and Medicare in its cradle. But Obama does not, President Obama doesn't simply have the Republicans, that weird rump of the old Confederacy. He doesn't simply have the Republicans with whom to contend. He has people who call themselves Democrats. He has Ben Nelson of Nebraska, Mary Landrieu of Louisiana, Blanche Lincoln and David Pryor of Arkansas. He has plenty of so-called conservative Democrats who are willing to continue their senatorial fiddling while the nation burns. Mr. Gabler continues, things have only gotten worse, much worse, since then. It is not only the 30-year Republican drumbeat that government is the problem, a cliche that has helped drain political will, or the tax cuts that, as Reagan's budget director David Stockman candidly admitted, were largely enacted to starve government and render it ineffective, or the incompetency of George W. Bush's appointees that was intended to discredit government. All of those things did those things, but it is not all to be laid at those doorsteps. Mr. Gabler says it is the Republican lurch rightward that has purged those few moderates and gamed the filibuster so that any piece of legislation is now held hostage to 40 votes. This generates cries for bipartisanship, neglecting the fact that there is one party adamantly opposed to any change whatsoever. How obstructionist is the GOP? From 1927 to 1962, cloture, the vote to end a filibuster, was invoked only 11 times. That's 35 years. In 2007 alone, with Republicans trying to derail initiatives in the Democratic Congress as disparate as an increased minimum wage, a climate change bill, campaign finance reform, and an energy bill, there were 62 cloture votes in 2007 alone. When you consider that Democrats are being hammered by Republicans as well as by lobbying interests, when you consider that conservative Democrats are being hammered by Republicans as well as by lobbying interests who provide them with campaign contributions, you can readily see that not even the Democrats' 60 votes in the Senate are sufficient to move legislation, even if there is a public outcry for action. Is the picture, has the fog cleared enough? Have the mists swirled away enough that we understand ultimately the grave danger in which the Republican Party, advancing party over country at every turn and at all costs, poses to this republic? That's my question, not Mr. Gabler's. He refers to not even the Democrats' 60 votes in the Senate. We don't have 60 Democratic votes in the Senate. Because the Senate is rudderless. The Senate is at sea and starboard facing the coming waves. According to polls, roughly 70% of Americans want a public option in health care. With that kind of support, the fact that it is even being debated is testament to how decrepit our system has become. Note the use of that word, decrepit. That is a mighty freighted word. That word has meaning that for anyone with an ounce of comprehension, which this audience, this Horn family, has by the 55-gallon drumful. That's a word freighted with horror for the future. Decrepitude is no good place to be. In his final paragraph, Mr. Gabler says, "And so we are now a nation with great professions of faith that we will succeed, but little real confidence that we will. A nation that focuses more on what can go wrong than on what can go right. A nation that can't seem to get action. We are a timid nation with small dreams and even smaller plans. A nation that seems to have lost its capacity to do big things. We all know the nation is broken, but we may no longer have the will or the institutions to fix it." How's that for a big old dose of sober up? It's like a slap in the face. You have some members of the Democratic Party who would like to fix the problems. They are opposed by a little rump party that should have no power whatsoever, whose only goal is to stop any repair of the damage their party has already done. Their only plan, should they be returned to power, is to continue chipping and hammering and banging and beating away at the very foundations of all that your ancestors and my ancestors, our forebears, our forefathers and mothers, fought and sweated and bled and died and lived to create. That is where we are. That is reality. The Senate Democrats will not get rid of Harry Reid, no matter how weak, how ineffective, how impotent he proves himself on a day by day by day by day by day basis. They will not. The for-profit media will not serve the needs of the public, which they were created and empowered to do. They too serve corporate masters. This is where we find ourselves in 2009. Half measure, half measure, half measure. You know what? If you put a new shoe on a horse, but you only use one nail, it is as if you did not shoe that horse at all. And all of our solutions, because of the pernicious influence of money and corporations in Washington and throughout this country, every solution that gets anywhere in our legislative branch, our executive branch, any solution winds up being a one-nail solution when nine are needed to hold the shoe. And for want of a shoe, the horse was lost. And for want of a horse, the king was lost. And for want of... Well, you know. This is America. Welcome to it. Let's go to the phones. Oh, and, well, wait, before I go to the phones, just to share with you the thoughts of Dr. Bill sent me this. In the course of our exchange about this particular article wherein he said it's exactly what he would have said. Upon writing me back, Dr. Bill said, "The ineffectiveness of our government to deal with necessary corrections in a timely fashion is absolutely true. He said, I'm especially fascinated with the author's realization that our political system is not designed to address crisis, but to prevent the kinds of change that might cause it. When there is a crisis to address, our political system seems unable to move. The Civil War is a classic example." How many of you are already thinking about the Civil War out there? "The Civil War is a classic example. Everyone knew that the nation was sliding into disunion and war." And we're talking here about the 1840s, the 1830s. Almost from the very beginning, this was seen coming. But it got really bad in the 1850s. Everyone knew that the nation was sliding into disunion and war. All but a few wanted to avoid that, but the system made it impossible to create the kind of supermajority that could halt the slide. Says Dr. Bill, "This idea interests me a lot. Healthcare, the environment, energy, diplomacy, all are areas that scream for attention. Obama's experience with healthcare is becoming a textbook scenario as to why obstructionism seems always to rule the day." And of course, Dr. Bill is correct. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, it's Brian from New Hampshire. Bob, it's great to hear your voice there, to hear a true American, a true patriot. What's happened here in this, what's happened in this sad country, this tragedy? I believe the latest onslaught began January 1981 with the coronation, basically, of Ronald Reagan. And he was a follower. He, too, loved the libertarians like Ayn Rand, who in 1982 at her funeral had a floral bouquet made out of a dollar sign. These social Darwinists like Alan Greenspan, who was responsible, this is getting to my point, that for the highest tax increase under Ronald Reagan in American history, the payroll tax, the Social Security tax, that gave us the Social Security surpluses that George W. Bush and other presidents, but especially George W. Bush, stole. And I would not call it a legal theft either, but the fact is, during the last 2 years of Bill Clinton's presidency, Bob, we had a budget surplus, so much so that he did not have to touch a penny of the Social Security annual surplus money's amount, which George W. Bush did throughout his 8 years in office, but for a total of $3.3 trillion to $4.1 trillion stolen from the American worker, the people that built this country, the people that continue to run this country. It's not CEOs, not management, not Wall Street profiteers and thieves. The fact remains that if Al Gore had been elected, duly elected as he was in November 2000, instead of the December 12th election theft decision by George W. Bush's daddy Supreme Court, if that had been allowed to happen, the Social Security lockbox would be in place. Al Gore was following Bill Clinton's policies against Al-Qaeda, too. There would have been no September 11th attacks. There would have been none of this tragedy, this evil that has gone on ever since, at least the most evil day of December 12, 2000, when this inbred, blue-blood, unqualified man named George W. Bush was allowed to hold office. This is the worse than the fall of the Roman Empire, because we are a superpower, Bob, and we can wipe out this planet in a matter of minutes. We were dangerously close to having Sarah Palin as a president with the skin cancer of John McCain, where she could step right in. And look at what could have happened. The Russians are back on guard against us. What happened in the Georgian debacle in August of 2008 on the eve of the Olympics was supposed to be a time of peace. Karl Rove and Condoleezza Rice, they egged on the Georgian premier to make that offensive into southern Ossetia and murder in cold blood 20 Russian peacekeeping troops. That's not the action of a democracy. I am in John McCain saying we are all Georgians today with such crap and tripe. I cannot imagine and I cannot conjure up why and how the American people are buying this nonsense and why they are so willfully ignorant. but people like you are a light in the darkness. All the other, Mike Malloy, the other great progressives out there, and we still may get through this, but people have got to wake up. I'm talking about the theft of Social Security, there's a great economist, Bob.
Yes.
Paul?
Go ahead.
Okay, Alan W. Smith, a Ph.D. in economics, the book, The Looting of Social Security, How the Government is Draining America's Retirement Account, and also he has a second book out, Social Security, The Plot to Kill It. He's an economist. He's semi-retired, lives in Florida, Winter Haven, Florida, Alan W. Smith. But he's talked about how George W. Bush made the worst theft by far of the Social Security annual surplus amount. It's the worst case of taxation without representation, I would say, in human history, Bob, not just in American history. And these people have got to be brought to bear. The Wall Street bailout is more of the same thievery. Barack Obama is too close to those criminals, but they are trying to set up this young president. I don't know whether he's really going to be anything like a John F. Kennedy or Robert Kennedy, that kind of a leader. Well, maybe if he was, he would just run into the same fate they did. But that's the kind of leader we need, and we have enough. The American people are much smarter than the national media makes us out to be. We are far more aware, and this time I'm certain. If they harm a hair on Barack Obama's head, or there's going to be many more of us to take his place. They're not just going to sit there passively like they did for, God love him, Dr. King, America's only king in its entire history, the Reverend Martin Luther King, who was murdered also by a conspiracy. We have to stand behind these people. We have to back them up, but we have to push them in either into being the progressive FDR that he needs to be, Barack Obama, or we got to get somebody else in 2012. The time is running too short.
Brian, I touched on this a little bit last night. Let's do at least be realistic about that. If Barack Obama is the incumbent in 2012, he will be the nominee.
Right. Well,
so
I understand.
I mean, that's not disagreeing with you. That's just reality within the system, as, for instance, you and I are talking about and Neil Gabler talked about.
Far better than in Sarah Palin's resurgence or whatever she's...
Or Jeb Bush or any other, Piyush Jindal or any of the other freaks that they might offer.
Jeb Bush is offered, they're reinvented another PNAC-type group there for another resurgence, maybe another false flag attack they want to hit this young president with, or worse. We have to don't trust anything people out there about when you hear any word of any so-called terrorist attack, the five young guys with they egged on with they gave them a phony missile. They were malcontented African American men, and with the theft of African American votes, Democratic Party and minority voters in 2000, 2002, 2004 elections, and suppression of them in 2006 and 2008 elections. I don't blame young black American males for being as angry as they are, but they have more media savvy. They're cooler than I am. Mike Malloy, too, my fellow Celtic Irish American temperament there, gets in the way of clear-headedness. The one thing was Ronald Reagan. He spoke once in 1984 in Boston with the dapper O'Neill, a local politician there. The one thing I agree with there was he was talking about the old Boston brick paved roads that Paul Revere's horse rode on there, that famous ride. He says he's looking at those old Boston cobblestone streets. Those bricks are not bricks. Those are Irish heads.
Oh, my God, that's...
You know, he was a charming guy. Compared to George W. Bush, Ronald Reagan was Einstein. And
there's no doubt about it.
You slipped.
Well, and that's what happens to us within this system every time we get to the point, because I'm sure you were there. I was among those. I was considerably younger, but Ronald Reagan was in office, and I kept looking up going, wow, this guy's an idiot. I mean, anything is going to be better than him. How wrong I was, because there was a fresh idiot being groomed even then that would make, as you note, make Ronald Reagan look like Einstein.
My God. And I knew a number of the Marines killed in 1983, October 1983, at the Beirut barracks by the Hezbollah Iranian officer. Back bomber there, and Ronald Reagan then turns around and does the Iran-Contra affair, sells millions of weapons to the Iranians' enemy under a violation of the clear violation of the Trading with the Enemy Act, and people still try to take him as a grandfatherly, wonderful figure in American history. I cannot bear what has happened. The Republican Party used to consist of people like Dwight David Eisenhower, even Barry Goldwater, and Abraham Lincoln. Now there's nothing but hacks, and you know that people have put party first. They want Barack Obama to have a Waterloo, but they don't care what happens to the American people, to their health care. They don't care. That these are profiteers. These are traitors. They're short-sighted traitors, like the people with the mountaintop removal people there. They are absolute thieves. A real coal miner that did that dangerous work there, that I have no idea how they do it, but they dig down deep and actually go down to those deep caverns and extract the coal instead of blowing the tops off of the mountains that it took Mother Nature, i.e. God, billions of years to build. That's nothing but what a short-sighted profiteer does, a traitor to their country. Always does that. That's just like the local dictators that sell out their people's natural resources to American corporations all over the world. We're getting sick and tired of it. I believe our young people are sick and tired of it, too. That's another reason why they move so much in favor of Barack Obama. But Barack's got to deliver more than he has. Don't you think?
Oh, Brian, he's got to. And that's this... I don't know if it's Gabler says it's a want of will. And that's what's been said on this program as well, that we lack the national will to correct national problems. And of course it's not difficult to understand how that is. The other side doesn't have to have an overwhelming majority of people who agree with them. They just have to have enough to make sure that
the national news media completely backing them up and legitimizing lunatics like Sarah Palin, for God's sake, as being possible presidents of the United States. This woman who didn't even know where she thought Africa was a country.
Yeah.
She barely knows. She says she could see Russia from some parts of Alaska. That this woman was so immature. You look at like Kate. I don't trust the Republicans at all. But you want people that are better qualified. You got Kate Bailey Hutchison. You got Mrs. Elizabeth Dole of the South Carolina. These are women who are mature enough. They could handle the situation. And they wouldn't. The heat wouldn't drive them out of the kitchen or whatever Harry Truman spoke about then. But this woman, this girl, Sarah Palin, how she got on there. It's still beyond me, and how the American people nearly elected that ticket.
Well, how she happened was easy enough. Hillary Clinton lost her bid for the Democratic nomination, and so the Republicans, in a case of the most crass, most the calculating political just machination, said, "Well, we can find us a woman."
Yeah.
And they got a double bonus in the form of getting a woman who was also a red meat, a bloody shirt waver for the evangelical right, Brian. That's how that happened.
She's a real good-looking lady, too, that to leave it at that. But she's in nowhere qualified, and she's obviously a recent behavior. She's proven she's not even qualified to be governor of the state of Alaska, for God's sakes. You know, this is what's happened to the Republican Party is perhaps an even bigger tragedy than what's happened to America since January 20th, 1981, Bob. But the fact remains that we do need. It's still going to take someday. America's going to wake up to. It's going to need. We're going to need new FDR type New Deal infrastructure building programs.
Brian, isn't the upshot of what Neil Gabler was talking about? The fact that what we really have to have is real Democrats in a massive majority in both houses of Congress.
Right, we got to get rid of all the DLC and the blue dog phony Democrats too. They're as bad as the Libertarians and the Republican social Darwinistic fascists as well. They're just as bad as their fellow corporate.
So the question presents itself: how do you change the hearts and minds of Nebraska to get rid of a Ben Nelson and get a real liberal in there?
Well, let's say if it comes down to the national media is what is allowing the people of Nebraska to remain, too many of them, conveniently and willfully ignorant to the real facts about anything like the September 11th attacks, what really happened, the stand-down orders that were given. I know Marine fighter pilots, ex-fighter jocks. 5 minutes even is an absolute eternity with any kind of hijacked plane. And remember the golfer, Peyton Stewart, October 99, they had jets up on his tail of that poor guy's doomed plane in less than 5 minutes. They had seven or eight military jets followed all the way until it crashed in the wheat field there, the farm field in the Midwest somewhere.
South Dakota, I think, yeah.
South Dakota, yeah. But Bill Clinton's NORAD was absolutely working at the time, but the all kinds of kinks were added to the armor and to the NORAD. All special rules were added. Stand-down orders were given. Weird and totally unprecedented evacuation orders were given in the weeks before at the World Trade Center in the weeks before the September 11th attacks. The explosives were set in that building, in those two towers there, and World Trade Center 7. What's it? Silverstein himself said that, you know, they had to pull it, to take it down. He knew what they were doing. He made billions from it. He tried to make three or four times as much as he did. He's so shameless, these people. This is what's gone on. We need, yes, real progressive Democrats. We need something that a minimum wage Barack Obama should be on the pulpit. On the bully pulpit, that's one thing I admire Ronald Reagan for. He could set the agenda, and he wouldn't back down. He wouldn't stop. We need a national minimum wage of something like $11.75, $12.75 per hour. Right now, not phased in like this is anemic, totally anemic $7.25 per hour minimum wage. And then you build the economy from the people that actually build the profits for these big shots in New York City. In Wall Street, in Washington, you let the workers be properly rewarded for being the most productive workers on the planet, the American people, and it's disgusting what they've done to them. And the American people cannot play stupid any longer. There's too much information out there, Bob. The fact remains that I still believe somehow that perhaps we can solve this thing peacefully. But I'm still very angry at my fellow Americans, as you are, too. How do we wake them up? We need to wake up the national media, I guess, is the national television networks.
But let's be clear, Brian. I mean, I'm not trying to gainsay you or naysay anything that you're suggesting, but you're not going to wake up the national media. You're not going to wake up the for-profit media, okay?
The American people themselves are moving away from the national media, though. They're moving more and more to the Internet and to local Internet radio programming. Like blogging on they want to get the real news where they actually have to read it on the internet, and they go to blogosphere and they go to all types of alternative news sources, even if they have to go to some website that's in Britain or Holland or New Zealand. The American people are getting fed up with it, especially the young people are fed up with the BS. I don't mean Bachelor of Science either. They want something far better than this dumbed-down, convenient, willful ignorance that has taken over this country for at least the last 20 years, but especially since they allowed this totally unqualified man, and my Catholic upbringing, whatever, I admit I pray for his safety and for George W. Bush to get some kind of decent wisdom. It never seemed to sink in, though, but he was a totally unqualified man to be holding that office of President of the United States. People knew that, and yet the national media propped him up at every turn. They continue to do so. They've even allowed Dick Cheney he's almost self-appointed himself president in the months after they left office, allegedly, and where he's criticizing Obama, saying he better not close down Guantanamo. We might have some more attacks if he does. It's almost like a veiled threat, and I sense evil when I see some of these people.
Oh yes.
It's not just George W. Bush. He might be the most. He might be like the Crawford, Texas, lost its village idiot. But whatever. He might be the most innocent amongst them. He might just be driven into what he had to do because, like the Bush family, like the Kennedy family, they had to seize office because he wanted to do what his father didn't do: get elected twice. And take over Iraq, you know, really conquer Saddam Hussein, for their oil reserves. It was for nothing else.
Sure. And Brian, I tell you what, I'm only doing this hour this evening. Listen, you have a million things to say, and I want you to say them all.
Right.
So don't be shy. Call back, and we will continue this. Okay. But I'm going to try to march.
I'll just end with this, Bob. Like the rest of the Americans, I don't want to be a good American, a willfully ignorant American, and go along with the official story regarding that most evil day in American history, September 11, 2001. But if I'm ever going to do that, I would just say that at the same time, to get in the concept of reality of the American willfully ignorant sheeple out there, that I would also say to the New York authorities to get that stupid ape Kong off of the Empire State Building finally. Could you do that? If you want to get to their level of reality, which is not reality-based, obviously. It's another planet. It's not even science.
Yeah, and by the way, Brian, before we do ring off, let me just invite you on behalf of everybody in the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room to go by there if you want. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. It's real easy to register, and folks would love to talk with you.
And I just want to wish you the best of luck of that mountaintop removal get-together you're having tonight, and God go with you, sir. You're a great American. You're a truly great American. These are things. Our patriots lost everything to the British Empire in order to gain our independence. They lost their wealth, what wealth they had. Many of them just lost everything, and their family, and they shed blood. They were in prison. Some of their family was tortured. Some were murdered. They lost everything. It's so to be the fact success and monetary success are not what makes you a great American, and it's certainly not what makes you it makes you an evil non-Christian, an anti-Christian, according to the Christ of human history.
Well, that's
so,
true too.
Threw out the money changers from the temple.
Brian, let me break with you for now. Yeah. We will have more of these conversations. I assure you, I look forward to them. And you take care and see if you can get into the chat room, all right?
Okay.
All right, take care, Brian. Bye now. Love that kind of passion. You don't hear that on the right wing. In fact, if we get time and I come back, I got what you do hear from the right wing. But let's get another call in. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
I'm doing good. How about you?
How could I follow that much truth? How can I follow that much truth from Brian? Oh, my God. That man said it, did he not? He said it with his heart.
He nailed it to the door, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Oh, thank you. Thank you for letting me follow true American. An American. What do you call it? Pilgrim? Huh?
Patriot.
Or at least whatever answer. Oh my God, Bob. Think about it. What he said, the truth in his voice, in his passion, he said it all. Thank you, Bob Kincaid, for allowing me on your little tiny stream. It doesn't go nowhere, huh? Think about it. It doesn't hit mainstream media. Son, you were there in the mainstream, were you not?
I was indeed.
In fact,
I got to tell you though, Bob, it was a different critter back then.
Yeah, and it is nothing other than a critter now. But you have a man of passion, a man of truth, even though it may not be the mainstream media truth, because they don't give the truth. He gave his heart, his soul, his strength, his being, his wealth, his life, his being, everything that he said to you was what he knew to be the truth. creature, that man, that being, that man, that man that took care of the boilers down in the bottom of a ship out in the Pacific.
He's never far from my mind or my heart, Bob. Truly he isn't.
Yes. And he is part of me. And he is a part of that man. Because I could hear his soul, his strength, screaming for the truth, Bob. We need the truth. Nothing. No. Nothing. But just give me the truth, okay? And you do the best you can, right?
We do indeed.
That's the dream you got. And I know, oh my God, I know, dear Agnes, she holds you to this earth, boy. She holds you to this earth.
She does indeed. Hey, Bob, let me roll along now. I've got one more blinking phone call, and I want to get to that before I have to slip off to the meeting. So good to hear from you, man. Don't be a stranger.
Be this to me. A believer in us. Not in them. In us. U.S. Us. U.S. Us.
Yes. Okay? Yes. Yes, indeed.
That. Love you, son. Take care.
Take care.
Talk to you later.
All right. Bye now, Bob.
Be safe.
Thanks. Bye. Our good friend Bob calling from North Dakota. And one more call before we head out. Oh, he quit on me. But that's probably because there were only a couple of minutes left before I headed out of here myself. We do have to go, and there is so much more to do. I hope I'm back in time for a third hour. I will not promise you that I will be. These things can run long. But check in around, hang out for me till about 10 after 8. If I'm back, I'll be behind the microphone. Okay? My word. Until then, my thanks to you. And we will operate optimistically on the principle that I will be back. And as such, we will not play the closing music. Instead, I've got a hankering to hear something I haven't heard in a while. I mentioned Jason Isbell the other night. His album Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit. Let's just close with a little track called 7 Mile Island. God, this is good. This is just yummy. So I hope I'll be back. We'll talk soon. If I'm not back tonight... Well, daggummit, tomorrow night's prayer meeting night, and you know where Brother Bob's going to be. Yeah. Talk to you soon.
Take your hand off when the sun goes down.